God is utterly different from the average Christian conception. As the Christians visualize God, it's just a parody of what the ancient heathens visualized as the gods on Olympus. They thought of Jupiter and a bunch of other gods and goddesses, all making merry on the top of some mythical mountain. They must have been mighty cold up there, that's all I can say, because the imaginary. 35. Pictures of them show them as being remarkably poorly clad, and if they had ever cavorted on the top of a mountain in that lack of clothing, then they would need to keep cavorting to keep warm. But, anyway, this is the way it is. Let us get rid of bias first, and let us look at the real problem. Let us look at communism. A certain little gang of people at the start thought, oh, why should this group of people have everything? We are the workers, we want everything too. And so they ganged up and they formulated some sort of a policy. The communist thought that all men and women should be equal and everyone should have the same amount of money, forgetting that if all the world had the same amount of money today, they would all have different amounts tomorrow. But the communists didn't like the way the capitalists were going on, so they formulated some kind of policy, if it can be termed policy, in which all the values of the capitalist were completely reversed, and then they went out to get converts, even if it made them out of work, even if they starved to death from hunger, and even if it brought misery to the world. In the early days of the Romans and the Greeks and a few other assorted people, there was a very good religion, a very good code of living, and people were happy, much more so than they are now. For example, there was much more freedom, cleaner freedom, in sex. There was much greater companionship, comradeship, between men and women. But then a little gang of people were jealous of the way the Greeks, the Romans and assorted other races were going on. They were too happy to be natural, they thought. So they took the teachings of a great man and altered them, bent them around, twisted them in a circle, and reversed everything that the Romans, the Greeks, etc., had been doing. Sex became something despicably filthy, and sex was awarded only to men as an inducement to do certain things which the priests wanted them to do. Women, instead of being the equal of men as they had been in the days of the Romans and the Greeks, women were now slaves, chattels, baggages for men to do with as they wished. But you often get situations like that when these little groups, possibly homosexuals at that, took a dislike to anyone. And so throughout the years Christians have worked hard to get con. 36. Verts. And they were going to make converts even if it killed the human concerned. If you think that is strange, then remember the Crusades, armed bands of brigands invading other peoples who were peacefully inclined. If you want further food for thought, think about the Spanish Inquisition, where they tortured a man to save his soul. What a stupid lot of rot. If I see one side of a coin, that is what I see. But a person looking at the obverse of the coin would see a different picture altogether. It is the same coin, but we have different viewpoints. And all this talk about exploring other truths. The truth is that humans are upon this earth to grow, to develop into more spiritual creatures, and if they do not do it, they will be removed and other creatures will be put here. It is like plants in a garden. A gardener plants a whole bunch of plants and watches them carefully. And if they do not develop as they should, then they are pulled out and fresh plants of a different type are put in. That is all humans are, that is all horses are, pigs are the same, different plants, different growths, different things which are being observed upon this earth. Our querist goes on, if such a thing as a perfect, final peace were to come about in the worlds of rational beings, would the opposite worlds then be doomed to an opposite fate? To so-called hell forever, or would their outcome, more hopefully, be also one of a kind of peace that manifests itself somehow in an opposite manner, whatever that might be? Will not all gods, intelligent, rational beings someday learn all their necessary lessons once and for all and return to a complete awareness of and oneness with the Creator? Or would it always be in His scheme of infinite love to be continually creating new beings who can choose to give themselves to Him, after first undergoing great struggle between positive, good, and negative, evil, forces? Then, After they have passed all their tests and returned to God, will they be followed by other new created beings in a never-ending creation? If peace comes to this world, perfect peace, that is, then it would mean that people here would not have to come back again. They would have learned a lesson, the lesson of keeping the peace, and then they would move on to some higher state. 37. Of evolution, where they could go to school again and learn something else. But all this about returning to God is nonsense. You don't return to God at the end of this life on earth just as a small child returns to daddy or mummy. It is not like that at all. There are many, many things to be learned. There are billions, trillions of years to live in different states, and I must tell you in this connection that I had a most offensive letter from two people in Australia. A man and a woman claimed that they were in touch with the gardeners of the earth, and the gardeners of the earth were such wonderfully good people, and all I write in The Hermit must obviously be imagination, because the gardeners of the earth would never do anything to harm a human. My goodness me. These people in Australia, they must have a hole in the head or something. Humanity is not the highest form of creation, it is just another specimen, the same as an ant is a specimen, the same as a tapeworm is a specimen. A tapeworm is learning one thing, a human is learning another, or rather, correction, they should be learning, which is a different matter altogether. But again, let me state definitely that we are here to learn certain things and to do certain things, and life goes on and on in cycles. I prefer to regard it as the swing of the pendulum. We have a pendulum swinging. Now it is at the top of its stroke and we are at a golden age where everything is wonderful, everything is peaceful, but where nobody learns. And then the pendulum falls and things become worse and worse, lower and lower. When we reach the lowest point of the pendulum swing, there are wars and rumors of wars, murders, everything, the whole crime calendar rolled into one. But after that the heedless pendulum continues upwards, and so we get a golden age again wherein no one learns, for it is a fact, a sad fact but still a fact, that people only learn by hardship and by suffering. And when a person has all that he wants, he sits back and enjoys comfort and does not do anything to try to help others or even himself. Another person writes to ask, can we ever meet our individual opposites? By that, presumably, is meant the twin soul, and if that should be so, then the answer is no, you do not meet your twin soul on this world, because if you did you would be 38. Complete and thus could not stay here. You can only stay here if you have an anchor which moors you here, some defect, or some artificially induced fault which enables one to stay here. People who come from beyond the spheres are like divers, they have to wear the equivalent of a lead belt, lead boots, etc., in order to keep submerged in this dreary world. So if a person met his or her twin soul, there would be the nearest approach there can be to perfection. And you cannot have perfection in a world such as this. So you will have to wait for your twin soul until you leave this world. Now another person says, you emphatically declare that each one of us finds God alone through individual effort, and that we should not depend upon others for assistance. Do you mean that the ultimate responsibility for use of one's free will in committing oneself to God rests squarely upon each individual's shoulders? No matter what kind or unkind things have been done to us by others, one consciously chooses the direction of his vision. Of course, truth and justice or deceit and injustice can affect the course of our lives either way, towards or away from the light, but isn't the application of the golden rule vitally important for each of us to practice, thereby helping others? I say quite definitely that every person must stand alone. It is silly to join cults, gangs, associations, institutes, etc., etc., and to expect salvation thereby, because you won't find salvation in these money-making cults which are merely out to get your money. Look at it like this: a person dies, leaves this earth for the astral realms, and that person is going to go to the hall of memories and answer to himself or herself for things which have been done or have not been done. There is no one else there except the newly arrived Su-One or entity or whatever you like to call it, and the connection with the over-self secretary or chief tutor of the hot dog society, or whatever you like to call all these cult things, to come and answer for you. You won't find the president of the Red Nose Association coming and saying, "Oh yes, Overself, you don't know anything. I told this person to do such a thing because the rules of our association say that that." 39. Is so he should take your place. You have to stand alone, then, naked and probably ashamed with it. And if you toss out all thoughts of these associations and cults on this earth, then you will be in training to answer alone when you reach the other side. Of course, if you are going to answer to your overself, then you need to have some good answers, and the best way is to obey the golden rule, which is, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. This person who writes this question seems to be wriggling and writhing and doing anything to evade the simple truth, the truth which is, you have to learn to stand on your own two feet, no matter whether they are flat or not. You have to stand on them, you have to be responsible for yourself. And if you help others by adherence to and obedience of the golden rule, then you will have much good in your astral bank account. Let me again state that God is not standing there with a working great cane, and the devil is not standing there with branding irons either. God is a positive force, the devil is a negative force. They are not people who praise or torture. While down here on this earth you cannot understand things which happen in many more dimensions. In the same way a sea slug sitting on a bit of slime in the bottom of the ocean could not possibly understand what people on the moon are experiencing, it could not even understand what people in high-rise buildings are thinking or doing, nor could it understand the commotion which is caused when people turn their television sets full on. All that would be completely beyond the comprehension of people here in the third dimension to try to understand what people in the 9th, 10th, 11th, or 20th dimension are doing. So everything is relative. We might understand more or less what other people on earth are doing, we might have a greater feeling that they are doing right or they are doing wrong, but how could we possibly attempt to understand what 20th dimension people are doing? You cannot comprehend the concepts of another dimension unless you have had some experience of that dimension. Actually, you can get an idea, a rough idea, from thinking that everything is vibration. One end we call feel, a bit. 40. Further we say sound, higher up still it is sight. Everything is vibration, on any planet, on any system, or any universe, so that gives us some faint illustration of other dimensions. It is rare indeed for a person to feel a sound or see a sound, yet they are all vibrations, all part of the same scale. There are entities who can see sound. There are animals who can hear different sounds, those which are beyond human range. Dogs, for instance, will respond to a whistle which is completely silent to humans. Cats see colors on a different spectrum. Cats, for example, see red as silver. But to give another slight illustration which might help, try to work out this for yourself. We have a person who was born blind. Now, you have the task of explaining to that person who was born blind the difference between red and pink, or between yellow and orange. How are you going to do that? You can't. There is no way in which you can explain to a blind person the difference between yellow and orange, or amber and brown. You could possibly explain the difference between red and green if the person was extremely sensitive and could feel the difference. But you work that out. You want to know what other dimensions are like, so cut off a dimension that you know, cut off sight. Then how are you going to explain to a person who has never known sight the difference between pink and red? Supposing you have a person who is completely deaf, how are you going to get that person to appreciate the difference between two fairly similar musical notes? Not so easy, eh? So unless you can give me answers to my questions, I cannot tell you of the experiences of the 9th dimension. Here is a question which will make your hair stand on end, so ladies, put on your bath hats, gentlemen, if you are bald, your hair will be standing up on your bald skulls. Here is the question: according to the Zen philosophers, there really is no right or wrong, thereby eliminating the need for judgment. Can you answer that? Well, I see the point behind it, And the answer is this: on the greater scale of things, right and wrong are completely different from what they are on earth. Here there are certain rules or laws which have to be obeyed for what is commonly thought of as the common good. For example, it is not right to steal, so a man, in theory at least, 41, should starve to death rather than steal money to buy food. If a man is smoking and for some reason he puts his still alight pipe in his trousers pocket and sets his trousers on fire, then in theory he shouldn't pull them off, because then he would be naked and he would offend public decency, and he could in fact be charged with indecent exposure. So, according to law, a man should be definitely hotted up in all the best places rather than expose himself to the lewd gaze when his trousers were on fire. Which do you consider right? Well, on the subject of indecencies, in some places the lady must keep her face covered from the gaze of all mankind. She can leave the lower part of her body quite uncovered and still be decent. Yet in other parts of the world she can have her face bare, but the lower part of her body must be covered, otherwise she is very much in disgrace. So what is right in one part of the world is wrong in another. Right and wrong are man-made precepts, and these have no basis of stability beyond the earth. At the same time, if one is judging oneself in the hall of memories one has had to go according to the rules enforced during one's lifetime, it would not matter in the least if you had transgressed against the purely artificial laws. For instance, if you had removed your clothes in public, that would not be an offense in the greater reality of the astral world. Anyway, Christians believe that man is made in the image of God, and yet they make an awful hullabaloo if a person appears naked. But why? Are they saying that God is indecent? But anyway, that is just a personal thought of mine. What does matter in one's judgment is that you have to answer: have you harmed another person? Have you helped another person? As examples of this, a person had a job which you coveted. You very much wanted that job, you could see yourself exactly fitting into that position, and so you made a little plot against the incumbent of that position so that he was discharged from his employment and you took it in his place. Now that, of course, is a sin, because that is going against a law of the universe which is: do no harm unto others. But if you told a little white lie in order to help a person get a job which he really could do, then that one i.e. would not be an offense, it would be good. 42. Far away, above all the trumpery laws and regulations of mankind, there are basic truths, basic rules which we transgress only at our peril. The laws of man on earth are not made for the individual but for the majority. And so that the best interests of majority can be served, often a law will appear to inflict hardship upon the individual. Never mind, that is one of the things we have to put up with if we are crazy enough to live in communities, because liberty is a relative term. If we were free to do anything at all, then we could go into anyone's house, take anything we wanted, do anything we wanted, and then we would be entirely free. Actually, that would not be to the benefit of the community as a whole, and so there are laws to protect the majority against the minority, and we break those laws at our peril, peril on earth. That is, most of them don't matter the slightest beyond this earth. What does it matter, for instance, if a person buys a packet of cigarettes in England after 8 o'clock in the evening? What does it matter if, in Canada, a person buys a newspaper on a Sunday? All these are childish, stupid things, but somebody had an idea somewhere, even if nobody knows what the sense of the said law now is. Here is another question. I understand that entities of the fourth and other dimensions are all very busily occupied in helping souls in this, the third dimension, and they stay exclusively helping us upon this world. What do they get out of it? No, of course that is not true. Let us consider life. All life, as a school. Of course somebody will write to me and say, "Oh, you are repeating yourself, you've told us all this before." But obviously I couldn't have told it very clearly, or people wouldn't still be asking me about it. So you people who want to write and complain, just be quiet for a bit, will you? All life is a school, then. Different classes, different grades. We on this earth happen to be in grade 3, third dimension. People in the fourth dimension are in grade 4. People in the fifth dimension are in grade 5. Now tell me seriously, thinking back to your own school days, can you truthfully say that the students in grade 5 at your school were very interested in staying on and helping the students in 43. Grade 3? More likely the grade 5 students thought the grade 3 students were grummy little punks who were beneath even a contemptuous notice. That is so, isn't it? So let me tell you this, there are certain people who are teachers who are unfortunate enough to be persuaded to volunteer to come to grade 3 to teach the crummy little punks in this class, and when they get down to grade 3 they find that the students are not at all anxious to learn. Were you anxious to learn when you were at school? So the teacher gets all sorts of nasty things said about him and eventually he gets really fed up with the whole procedure and he says to the headmaster, "Well boss, I can't stick all these punks, I have to go to a different class or I shall go even crazier. Where can you move me?" So take it from me, the teachers on the earth, teachers from other dimensions, are trying hard to do something to help the people in grade 3. Help the people in the third dimension. And if the people in the third dimension would be a bit more appreciative, they would get on much faster, because there comes a time when even the best of teachers get sick and tired of continual persecution and wants to move on. Now I have been taken to task, not for the first time and not for the last, but I have had a comment. "Oh, but you can't leave it like that. People will not at all understand what you mean by God. In some places you say that God is a concept and in other places you say that God is a person. How are you going to account for that?" Oh dear, troubles never come simply, do they? Well, there are gods and gods. The average person prays to his or her God. Actually the prayers are going on the first class route to the overself, but if you want to get a bit higher up then you can pray to the Manu of the planet. Or, if you have connections up there, you can pray to the Manu of this whole universe. As I have tried to make clear in my books, apparently without any success, the God system is very much like a multiple store or a chain of stores where you have each branch manager as God to his cohorts or hirelings. But all the departmental managers or branch managers look upon the president or chairman of the company as God. So let's 44. Try to get this clear. One can pray to a person whom one regards as God. He may be the overself, he may be a Manu, or he may be a chief Manu, or he may even be the God of the universe. But he is not the top God by any means. The top God is something completely different, something which one can only regard as a concept at the present time because, as I have already been telling you, you cannot discuss 9 or 10 or 20 dimensional things in 3 dimensional concepts. So go on regarding your God as a person or entity, but keeping clear in your mind that there is something very, very much higher than all this. 45. Chapter 3. The most honest man in Montreal stood square behind his shuttered door and peered through a crack at the scene outside. The street was like a battlefield. Police cars and motorcycles roared around. Bottles and rocks flew through the air, landing with a satisfying crunch. Across the road from the store where Henry Mendelssohn stood on guard over Simon's cameras, the great embattled Promises of La Presse loomed as a symbol of might of the press. Yes, the striking pressmen had brought the great drawing machines to a halt. No longer did the ticker tape spew out miles of messages. No longer did yammering reporters hound those who were deemed newsworthy. The press strike was a time when, for some, the air was cleaner. May the strike long continue. But for people like Henry Mendelssohn, boss of Simon's cameras, the loss of business was great and serious. Behind his store a new three-way road was being cut. In front of him, the La Presse strikers, police, barricades, all the impediments to honest trade. Now, of course, the strike is over and Henry Mendelssohn is prospering again. Why do we have to have strikes when so many people are out of work? If people aren't satisfied, then let them give up their jobs to those who will do the work. Why blackmail the whole country, A whole continent just at the whim of a few money-hungry leaders of communist-inspired unions. The press, and the unions, the curses of modern-day life. Henry Mendelssohn, a good man, an honest man. Why should he and others like him be almost ruined by fighting strikers? If it is not embattled pressmen stopping trade on the street, then it. 46. Is striking mailmen preventing him from running his very efficient mail order business. I have known him for years, he is a good friend of mine, and I feel strongly that all these vicious strikes should so harm the innocent and just. Montreal was like a beleaguered city. Roaming strikers, very efficient police, and gangs of would-be revolutionaries lounging insolently on street corners. Long-haired men reveling in their dirt and deliberately torn rags swaggered along the streets muttering outlandish and uncouth greetings to others of their ilk whom they met briefly and passed on. Montreal, where French Canadians did not like French Canadians. Where it was frequently very difficult, as I found, to get any attention in a French Canadian store unless one spoke French. The city of Tatungs. A city which I found it delightful to leave when the time came for that action, as you will read later. The old man often watched from his home in the river. Watched the flash of explosions by night. Watched the flashing light of police cars in pursuit of arsonists, revolutionaries, watched the FLQ crisis where a good and just man was murdered at the behest of some illiterate punk. Watched too, when Mayor Drapeau came by. Mayor Drapeau, one of the finest, if not the finest, man French Canada has produced. Mayor Drapeau, who is so hounded by a press with no understanding nor conception of greatness. For it is truly a fact that Mayor Drapeau has made Montreal into a city, instead of the collection of hovels it was before his advent. Yes, his worship is one of the truly great in this age of very, very little men. The old man in the wheelchair watched when the FLQ hoodlums went rushing by his window, escorted by grim police, when they were taking diplomat cross to the foreign territory of the Cuban pavilion on the site of Man and His World. The helicopter that took these gangsters off to the airport flew over the old man's head. But now, in the gathering dusk, the old man lay upon his bed watching the lights of Montreal come on. The first dull glow of the newly switched on street lamps as they burned dull first, then quickened into yellow-green light. The multi. 47. Colored neons on the advertising signs and the tall skyscrapers as they suddenly blazed into the light of nightlife. Way up on Mount Royal the great metal cross stood limned in light against the darkened sky as somewhere a robot sensor responded to the stimulus of darkness and turned on a switch. Downriver, beneath the fairy tracery of the Jacques Cartier Bridge, a liner came steaming along all aglow with strings of lights twinkling from four epic to mastheads to stern posts and jackstuff. Little tugs, with sides ribboned with lights, fussed around the ocean giant while from them came shouts in the peculiar patois which the French Canadian believe is French. Gliding lights in the night sky and the muted roar of jets showed the arrival of aircraft from the capitals of the world. Sabina from the Belgian cities, Lufthansa, KLM, and the streaming crowds from Britain. There came too a plane from Russia, a rarity which now is a rarity no longer. The aircraft of the nations of the world flew overhead. Now, though, an increasing number flew non-stop to Toronto to avoid the inconvenience and rudeness of the airport of the city of two tongues. But the hours crept slowly by. Lights changed. Fresh ones were lit. Others were extinguished. Traffic on the road slowed but never stopped, for this city never slept. The old man turned, glanced without affection at the pile of letters yet to be answered, and mentally consigned them to a warmer place. Tomorrow, he thought, he would start early and clear up the lot before the next day's bunch arrived. So thinking, he turned over and went to sleep. Others in the house may say that he snores like a grunting pig with the overtones of a rusty gate, but when one is astral traveling, well, one is entitled to snore. Morning came as morning will in even the best regulated of households. Morning came, and with it came the time, once again, for work. The never-ending drudgery of letters, letters, letters. Here is a question which is very topical because acupuncture is very, very much in the news at present.